You are about to enter the pop, pulp, and subcultural minds of several individuals. What may leak into the ether can sometimes be too strange, too confusing for the average human mind. When nerds assemble.
Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
We've got a mixture of things to do this week. We've got some news, and we're also going to give you some highlights from Retroid and Cookie's sojourn to Eurogamer. We'll be giving you an in-depth analysis, as it were, of that next week. But for now, some interesting bits of news. Now, I'm not sure if any of you heard, but at least a week or so ago, there were concerns about the health of Stan Lee because he had to call off some conference or expo attendances in the US. And finally, it came out near the end of last week that he's had a pacemaker fitted. The poor, the poor guy. I mean, he's pushing 90. He's meant to be. I think his birthday's in December, and he'll be 90 then. So the fact that he's managed to make it this far without having anything like that fitted is actually quite astounding in of itself. Anyway.
Yeah, he's done very well for himself.
And he doesn't look 90, to be fair, does he?
No, he's always looked quite youthful. I have a feeling it's probably due to his career choice, actually, working in comics for a long time.
Yeah.
True. A very long time.
You reckon the key to youth is to work in comics?
It's a youthful industry, despite I would say maybe not the average age of writers being young, but certainly a youthful industry. What I liked was the statement that he released, which if nobody minds, I'm going to read out. Attention troops, this is a dispatch sent to, from your beloved Generalissimo, directly from the center of Hollywood's combat zone. Now hear this, your leader hath not deserted thee. In an effort to be more like my fellow Avenger, Tony Stark, I have had an electronic pacemaker placed near my heart to ensure that I'll be able to lead thee for another 90 years. But fear thee not, my valiant warriors. I am in constant touch with our commanders in the field, and victory shall soon be ours. Now I must end this dispatch and join my troops, for an army without a leader is like a day without a cameo.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else could have quite...
I have to like that.
Yeah. I don't think anyone else could have quite done an announcement like that about the fact they've had a pacemaker fitted to their heart.
You know, if Tony Stark was real, I reckon that he should donate one of his suits to Stan Lee.
Totally.
It's only fair.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Actually, though, you know, a heart powered by something like an arc reactor.
Does anyone know whether Stan Lee's actually made any cameos in the comics?
There is a comic with him, at least I think with him in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And he's probably appeared elsewhere. I remember because for Cornwall Graphic Novel Group's meeting at the weekend, I watched something like In Search of Steve Ditko. And weird thing, one of the weird bits of memorabilia they mentioned on that was that in the 60s, they did like some vinyl recording, which was like all the writers and various other people from like Marvel just kind of talking about stuff to do with comics. And they gave it to members of the fan club. The Marvel fan club, so
which is cool.
Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that now.
I was kind of slightly in disbelief of the statement because at the end he didn't actually say Excelsior.
This is true. There is a lack of Excelsior. If anyone knows how he tweets on Twitter, and talks generally to his fans, there's usually cries of Excelsior a lot.
Well, was it me or was there not a true believers there? I did miss that.
I'm just looking.
There's not true believers there either.
No, he's fine. It's nothing. It's more my valiant warriors than anything else. Yes. Yeah, I mean, because a lot of people were getting defensive when it got announced that he'd been having a few health problems when he wasn't able to turn up to cons. And they're trying to say, oh, he wasn't seriously ill, but at the same time, you're kind of a bit ill if you have to have a pacemaker fitted.
Yeah.
But let's just hope he'll be fine and he'll make it to at least his 91st birthday.
Yes, definitely.
Well, he's promised another 90 years. So that'll be 180.
90 years. Well, it could always, you know, get cryogenically frozen, you know. I hear that's a thing.
Yeah. Wasn't one?
Sort of next to Walt Disney.
Walt Disney, yeah. That's what I was going to say. Walt Disney got...
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
In some dungeon somewhere.
Also allegedly.
Some people, I think I'm the only person that liked this next bit of news, but as Psy's Gangnam Style mania continues to not just South Korea, but essentially the world at large.
World domination is at his bloody feet, isn't it?
And don't forget, Psy's Gangnam Style became UK number one last night on Sunday.
Yep.
Yes, I heard that. I thought, Emily will be pleased.
I am pleased. It's the first boy meets girl, girl meets boy song that actually sounds like you could dance to it with a decent beat for bloody ages. And
is that what it's actually about then?
Yeah, it's about.
I just heard a lot of Japanese. So I just didn't understand it.
Korean, but it's about a guy. It's about a guy who wants to get with a girl.
You should make a petition to get that into Just Dance 4.
If they have, there's rumours. I'm not sure if it's been confirmed, but there were rumours of it getting into at least Dance Central 3.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That would actually be quite amusing.
But the news itself that I wanted to report, other than it being number one, was that somebody has gone to the immense effort. This is more effort than the Deadpool Gangnam Style parody. Somebody's gone to the effort of doing a Klingon-style parody of Gangnam Style, and I'll be including a link for this in the accompanying post for the episode.
I'm not sure
whether
to pity them or honour them.
Well, they've rewritten the entire song in Klingon, and they put it in Klingon.
They have watched the video, and it was quite amusing.
And they've got a person dressed up as a Klingon, and a whole bunch of people in Trekkie uniforms, and a strange take on the Worf, Riker and Deanna Troi relationship from Star Trek The Next Generation, as far as I can tell. As kind of that weird love triangle.
And there's part of me that's hurting.
I mean, it's quite interesting to watch the once. I'm not sure I would have bothered to have taken as much detail and time in doing it, but...
They even did...
Whatever floats your boat.
The highlights...
You are without honour.
Highlights include the elevator moment with, was it Whoopi Goldberg's character?
Oh, yeah.
Right, Guinan. Somebody dressed up as Guinan in a lift. Doing the lift moment with the Klingon underneath her. And
it's just not good.
I've got to watch that now.
Yeah, you do have to watch it the once. I will give you that. You have to watch it the once.
Today is a good day to dance.
I will make it so.
I have to say, it wasn't quite a fan production. It was actually part of some, as far as I can tell, sort of geeky comedy website. So it's kind of like somebody who's maybe trying to muscle in somebody like College Humor or is it Dorkly?
Mm.
Yeah.
They do more computer game type stuff.
Or like Funny or Die or something.
Yeah. But to be honest, it was pretty good. I especially liked what they did about recreating explosions and the train scene. Really liked that. But you'll have to go watch it to find out more. In other enjoyable pieces of news. I don't know, it depends, because he's a divisive figure, actually, these days. Mark Miller is now Fox's consultant for its Marvel movies.
Which I think was a good move.
It's a good idea to have somebody who writes comic books to be a consultant on your comic book movies. I've got to give them that.
And to get someone like Mark Miller to do it as well.
It's definitely a step in the right direction.
It's something which is such a good idea, it makes me suspicious.
Well, that somebody might have eaten, like, sort of, like, sensible drugs or something that make you...
Yeah, it's just what? Drugs. What? You've actually got someone acting in that capacity who knows what they're doing?
I know
that's not how it usually works.
I know it's
logic, Jim. It's logic.
I know it's a strange concept for a Hollywood studio to perhaps actually involve somebody with market knowledge for once, quite a bit actually of market knowledge. I think because there was a lot, they did, you know, a whole press release thing and all that, and the one bit that sticks is actually Miller's statement. I'll read out his lovely long quote, which we can pick apart in a moment. As someone who has spent his entire life obsessed with both comic books and movies, this is essentially my dream gig, as it's a unique combination of both, stated Miller. I spent 10 years working at Marvel, and I'm really happy with the work I did on the comic side of things, so the idea of working with these characters now in a brand new medium is enormously exciting for me. I really like the Fox team, love this bold new direction they have for their franchises, and I'm proud to be working alongside some modern cinema's biggest talents. James Mangold, who's directing The Wolverine, is incredible. Matthew Vaughn, X-Men, Days of Future Past, is one of my closest pals, and Josh Trank, Fantastic Four, gave us, in my opinion, one of the greatest superheroes of the last decade with Chronicle. The invitation to to join this crew was maybe the coolest phone call I've ever had.
He's quite excited, isn't he?
He's quite excited. I mean, he's basing James Mangold's awesomeness on a film that hasn't come out yet. X-Men Days of Future Past. Is that the name?
What is that?
Well, I thought it was X-Men First Class 2, but...
Yeah, I'm a bit confused on that one.
Perhaps there's a name change in it.
Yeah. Maybe that was a leak that you shouldn't have done.
You know, I remember there was a, you know, in the X-Men 90s cartoon, there was a couple of episodes called Days of Future Past.
Mm. Yes.
So I'm wondering whether it's actually kind of similar storyline to
it's,
that.
To be honest, it's funny he brings up Matthew Vaughn, but he actually doesn't bring up sort of like... Yeah, I mean, I thought X-Men First Class was called X-Men First Class in the US, so...
I have no idea with that.
Yeah, I think perhaps Fantastic Four, just it's like saying Josh Trank, Fantastic Four, and then going, oh, but wait, he did Chronicle.
I didn't even know there was a new Fantastic Four movie in development. To be fair,
There must be, or else they'd be losing the rights back to
no
Disney before again.
Well, I presume it's not the the Jessica Alba.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah. I think things sort of bigging up greatest superheroes of the last decade with Chronicle. Now that's interesting because Paul B's dad got Chronicle on Blu-ray not long after finally getting a Blu-ray player. Somebody gave it to him or he bought it for himself. I can't quite remember.
They got it as a gift.
As a gift. Okay, so he got it as a gift. And he watched it. We went there when he originally watched it. And then we sort of come around to Paul's parents' house like a week or so later, and he goes, God, I've watched this film, it's called Chronicle, it's awful. I absolutely hate it. None of the characters are like, it's just appalling. And not to be offensive towards Paul's dad, but he does like...
some tacky stuff.
Yes. Like, perhaps... The Transformers movies, the recent ones.
Well, I mean, me and Emily have never really been a fan of stuff like that either, which my dad does like.
But he hated Chronicle, and then we sort of like finally said, well, look, let us watch it. And that was a couple of weeks ago now. So we finally watched it sometime in September, and we're like, oh, we think this is quite good. You've got the good balance of characters that you may or may not like. There's some character development going on. And despite the whole fact that it tries to make itself some kind of sort of self-documentary thing, it works.
In some respects, I would actually call it probably the superhero version of Super 8. Anyway, most of it's documented. Documentary stuff.
Definitely. It's definitely different.
Mm. Because Miller said these things in this statement, going back to Miller, I'm kind of like, is this really what Miller stated? Because it's part of a press release. So, as somebody who occasionally is involved in the sort of creation of press releases, I query how this was created. Because of how things are said. But, you know, maybe it's fine. Maybe it's fine. But speaking of the Wolverine, they finally released sort of its first promo image. It's very topless Hugh Jackman as the Wolverine, claws out, dark, brooding, gorgeous. Of
course. Emily, calm yourself.
Oh dear.
Because obviously, naked Wolverine in X-Men Origins Wolverine wasn't enough. Clearly, I mean, if because it's part of it set in Japan. I don't know quite how closely they're following the comics, but. Yeah, he has a kid over there. So, yeah. Is anyone else got anything to say about the joy of Mark Miller becoming a consultant for Fox?
I think it's going to be a good move. It should be anyway. If they can't get that right, then God help us. God help us all.
And as promised, we wanted to bring you, at least this week, a couple of highlights from Retroids and Cookies Sojourn to the Eurogamer Expo, which happened at Earls Court at the end of September. So, Retroid, I hear you managed to get to a couple of the developer sessions. Was there a particular one that you wanted to tell us about today?
Well, there were interesting the ones I managed to get to. Unfortunately, I missed the Peter Molyneux one, which would probably be one of the most talked about. But one of the more interesting ones I went to was the dev session for Dishonored, coming from Bethesda Games.
That looked like a quality game from what I saw.
Well, it was one that my fancy had been tickled.
Yes.
By some of the footage that was coming out from other shows. So I thought, I'll definitely have a look at this, because it was listed as an extended look at Dishonored. And I thought, okay. So we got into the auditorium, nice seats and everything, and the two developers came on, and they were talking about some of the history of Arkane Studios, the developers, saying that they'd done some, as well as their own games, work on some other titles, like they did some level design work on Bioshock 2. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know that. And for its faults, I quite liked Bioshock 2. But they were talking about how they'd been bandying about ideas and they'd had the idea for Dishonored. And for anyone who doesn't know, Dishonored is a game about an assassin. They said they started off in basing it in London. And then it sort of wandered off into an alternate world, which takes bits of London, and as they charmingly pronounced it, because they're French, Edinburgh. that raised a little bit of a chuckle from the audience, but it's like, we'll forgive you, and a few European cities, and it does look rather nice, and a few people were saying it reminded them of Bioshock, but I have to say personally, the look of the game reminds me a lot of Thief.
Well, that's one of the things that they were, I'm not sure if they were keen to get away from or to point out overall, because isn't it like a spiritual successor to Thief in a way?
I was definitely getting a Thief vibe from it, because whereas Thief is, you can say it's a sort of an alternative medieval world with different technologies like the clockwork and steam.
Mm. Okay.
This is, if you can imagine where the Thief world would go a few centuries down the line with the Industrial Revolution.
Hmm. So has it got a kind of steampunky type thing going on?
It, it, yeah, it, it,
It does, yes.
A little bit, and it's the art style is amazing. I quite like that. I actually stood there watching people play it for about 10 minutes. Didn't get into the queue to play the demo. I just stood there watching.
There were a lot of demo machines, and there was a very good queue.
But I wasn't too bothered about that, because I was just happy sitting there watching it, to be fair.
Of course, some of them you can get, you know, what you need from them just by watching the demo play in session. But yeah. So, you know, they were talking about the world, and it does look like a vaguely steampunky alternate London/European city. So I like the setting. I know that, were you going to say something there?
I was just saying, I'm still trying to get over the fact that they reworded what are we going to do with the drunken sailor for one of the trailers.
Oh dear. Sacrilege.
But yeah, so I mean, was there anything interesting that they showed you about the gameplay during the dev session for it?
Yes. Now, they just did a quick question of right, you know, put up your hand if you played this, you know, the demo on the show floor, and several people were, you know, putting up their hands, and it was right, who has played it through in stealth? And significantly fewer hands were springing up. And, you know, who has played it through, you know, just attacking? Far more hands put up. And they had a chuckle at that. And they said, right, well, what we'll do is we'll give you two playthroughs. The first playthrough was as stealthy as possible, using the abilities to fast teleport past guards, distract them, possess the rats, which you can do, just to get into different areas to have a look around. Using abilities to see through walls and see where switches and guards were, where the guards were looking, how much attention they were paying to any noises going on, all that kind of thing. And the aim of the demo was to kidnap a doctor, which was who was the doctor to the emperor.
Okay.
So you had to get into the doctor's house, past guards, past his staff, knock him out, and then getting down to the docks so you could get picked up by a compatriot. And he demonstrated how he could get around the guards by using a fast teleporter. Now, the fast teleporter, when I'd seen in the demo and people playing it, most people were just presuming it was the type of teleporter where you had to go from point to point and you had to see the ground.
Okay.
Now, with this, you could actually fast teleport onto, say, the side of a high ledge.
Hmm. Okay.
So you didn't have to see the ground at all. So if there was a side of a wall, you could fast teleport to that, and the icon would go from a circle of wind to sort of up arrows to demonstrate that, you know, you'd climb up onto it.
Okay, so it sounds like you have complete freedom.
There is quite a lot of freedom. There are joists that are sticking out the side of ruined buildings, and you can fast teleport onto those and observe guards from above, that kind of thing. You could also set off security alarms, free prisoners to distract the guards. So while they're attending to the prisoners that are running away, you can just nip behind and away. So that was the first playthrough he did, which was stealth. And then he just went and did the same demo, except taking on every single guard he possibly could, including some nice little sections where he was possessing guards and getting them to shoot each other in the head. If there were grenades being thrown, to freeze time, pick up the grenade, throw it back at them, and then shoot the grenade while it was flying over their heads. All that kind of thing. Unleashing swarms of rats to eat the guards. all that kind of thing. It was quite ingenious, a lot of the you know, the techniques that were coming out. And it was just surprising what you could do, the variation the vertical nature of the levels, where you could fast teleport onto pipes to go over guards and past these energy barriers that they had, or you could possess one of the maids and throw them into the security barrier to disarm it. So it was all dependent on if you wanted to be good. Well, I don't know if it has a karma system or not, but you could play good and not harm anyone, because after all, from what I could see from some of the artwork they were showing, there is a revolution or something like that brewing to overthrow, you know, the government or the city state that this takes part in.
Okay.
So it was trying to give as little away of the plot as possible, but there were little hints that you could see, portraits and bits of graffiti on the wall saying "the outsider walks amongst us."
So would it be fair to say that this game, because it seems like it's pretty much a game where you can kind of play it however you want. Is that kind of fairly true to say?
Yes, they were saying that they wanted to make a game where you could go through it without killing anyone, most of the levels anyway, or you could just approach it as you were out to kill as many people as possible. You could save prisoners and they could give you information and side missions, or you could just unleash them on the guards and the guards would kill them. So it's entirely up to you how many of these things would be opened up, or whether you just wanted to charge through as bloodily as possible.
I mean, it's in a way, obviously, I think once it comes out, a lot of people are going to be drawing comparisons of it and sort of Deus Ex Human Revolution. But obviously, I think the way I'm hoping that it trumps Human Revolution in not having stupid boss fights. If they manage to not have stupid boss fights, that at least you can't choose how you approach them, then the game will, I think, essentially end up trumping Human Revolution.
Yeah.
It's definitely a game that now I've seen it in motion and now I have played the demo on the show floor. I didn't complete the demo, but I managed to use some of the tricks that I'd seen in the stealth playthrough to get much further without being seen.
Awesome.
Yeah, I am very interested in it, and it's a game I'll be buying now, whereas before it wasn't.
It's a game that's high on mine to get list now. I must have just from seeing what I saw.
Oh, and just while I remember, an example of the differences between the two playthroughs. If you go on an all-out assault, there was just a platform over a canal that you could use just walk over. But of course, there were guards there, including some guards who could suppress your quote-unquote magical abilities.
Okay.
By being in close proximity with them.
Cool.
Now, in the all-out attack, you just went across that platform and killed all the guards and went in through the front door. On the stealth playthrough, you could fast teleport past the guards into the water, swim over to a water wheel, and then enter through the basement of the building.
Okay.
Wow. So there are different avenues that you can enter and exit these buildings where you're going to be going. So it is quite varied, and they do seem to have gone for the you can play these differently depending on how you're feeling. Or who knows if there are achievements for being stealthy or not. There probably are.
But it's making me really want Dishonored now. were there any games that either of you got to play on the show floor that you were particularly fond of after giving them a go? Cookie, perchance?
Yeah, my favourite had to be Tomb Raider, that I actually got to play the hunting demo of.
That was quite good.
I have to say, I'm really impressed with how it's sort of gone. It's a lot more realistic than the previous titles. It's a lot more, it seems to me, there's a bit more of a sort of a sense of dread, a bit more darkness to it. And I actually, it was a game that I'd been watching in the news, and a bit like with Retroid and Dishonored, it was a game that I was humming and ahhing about getting. But after playing the demo, I have to say I'm probably actually going to end up pre-ordering it. Because it was, you started up on a cliff after, basically, after your boat's capsized on this island, and you have to go and look for survivors. And you make yourself across, you go across sort of a path, and you have to do some jumping and climbing exercises. But you're actually quite badly wounded, and you've got blood sort of coming out of your sides and your stomach and stuff. And it's a lot more realistic than any other Tomb Raider. It's gone a bit like, it's sort of gone towards the Uncharted sort of area, but even more sort of darker and realistic.
Yeah, a few people were comparing it with Uncharted, and I can see where they're coming from, especially the bit where there's the crashed plane.
Yeah, which you had to jump onto, the crashed plane, which was quite cool. But then you got to find the med pack, and you found some evidence of survivors, and you found a radio. Then you had to get out of the storm, because suddenly a tropical storm appeared. So you find a cave, and you've only got one match, but you managed to light a fire. And then you go hunting for some food, and you find a bow and arrow from a body up in a tree, which you have to sort of climb and dangle across to get hold of. And then you shoot the deer, and you sort of actually go over to it and actually have to pull the meat out. And I don't know, it was quite interesting to see, because it was just a little bits like when you've killed the deer, and Lara goes off over to the deer in the cutscene and sort of takes the meat out. She actually apologises to the deer before she finally kills it. And
yeah, I like
tears
that.
A tear sort of starting to run down her face because she's had to do it. And it just added a bit more atmosphere to the game.
Because, of course, the deer isn't instantly dead. She goes over to it and is just sort of gasping and twitching a little bit.
Yeah, and it sort of upsets Lara that way. And it just looks like it's really shaping up to be really good reboot of the series. They've really done really good work on it.
It is a genesis of the character.
Yes.
And if you treat it as that, I know there was a lot of fuss with the stupid language used by one of the people from the developers. A few months back, and that was just incredibly badly thought out.
Yes.
But yeah, if you treat it as, it's almost a bit like Tarzan, in that it's, you know, someone who's taken from, you know, one life and landed in another. And of course, Lara's all older, but she is
still
a
young
girl
who's
never had to do anything like this.
No, she's still naive, isn't she? She's still innocent.
She finds herself in a position where she has to survive.
Yeah.
So you can see where it's going to progress within the game.
So
I did like it.
Yeah, definitely. That was my standout title that I played anyway.
In comparison to Dishonored, I'm not looking forward to Tomb Raider as much. And perhaps the one thing that I worry about is that, it being the game, is that there could be some awkward boss battles thrown in into the actual main game.
Let's hope not. Boss battles are something we shouldn't really have to put up with now.
No.
What would you say is the most unique feature of this game that hasn't been in previous games?
Sorry?
What's the most unique feature of Tomb Raider the new Tomb Raider that hasn't existed in the previous games so far?
There wasn't really a feature that I hadn't seen particularly in a Tomb Raider game. There was a lot more climbing than a lot of the previous Tomb Raider games.
Yeah.
I suppose. The bow and arrow that she grabs, I found, was a lot more realistic than the weapons she used to use in other games, because it was quite realistic, and I quite liked how she actually took it off her back to use, rather than it just appeared in your hands. She actually takes it off her back, and sort of the animation there was quite good.
And if you held the bow for too long,
yes,
she'd have to No, reason. Relax.
Yeah, she'd have
a bit
to
like the sniper in Team Fortress.
Yeah. Sorry. Primary. Ages on end.
But you couldn't just prime it and then walk around the corner.
No.
So this was more of a kind of refinement of everything Tomb Raider rather than kind of remaking it in a way.
It's definitely a completely new attempt at it.
Yeah. It's got the basics there, but they have refined a lot of the basics, I think.
And I will say, while I liked it, there was a little... I was starting to get a bit of a hint of, yes, I know she's a young lady, and it's bad rainy weather, and she's wearing a tank top, but I'm pretty sure you might... You're not zooming in, but you might not be using the angle if this was a male character.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, I see. She's all wet and muddy. Let's see her preparing this from over her shoulder, looking down slightly.
Oh no.
And it's just, it wasn't hugely overt, but it was just could you maybe not do that quite so much?
Okay, I have to ask, who would win in a fight, Lara Croft or Nathan Drake?
Oh, now, if you're talking about the Lara Croft in the demo that we played, then Nathan Drake. Because after all, Nathan Drake is, he's swung through those games annihilating armies.
Yeah.
Whereas in this, she's apologising to a deer.
Yeah.
And also, there's a quite a bit of the trademark jumping over chasms and walking, over fallen trees, and things like that. But she, she's obviously not got the skill set that the character is known for. So when she grabs the bow and arrow off the body,
yes,
that's
yes,
been caught in a trap, she does fall.
Okay.
Yeah, she sort of overreaches for it and then grabs it off the body and falls off.
Well, I mean, it sounds like they've gone to not just like the beginning of Lara's kind of story, but also the beginning of Lara's kind of skills. In a way,
exactly.
She's very human in this one before she kind of becomes the Tomb Raider.
I mean, so long as you haven't played any of the previous Tomb Raider games, at least it won't seem like she's lost all her skills and needs to get them back.
Let's put it this way.
Metroiditis.
I was going to say, it's not Metroid, where you start the game as a complete badass, and then something happens and you lose everything and you spent the rest of the game getting them back. It's like, no, you start from the beginning and she has to learn all the skills. And I kind of like that. I have played quite a few of the other, less so the PS1 era.
Yeah.
But I played the releases on 360.
I have a dubious relationship with the Tomb Raider games, at least two of the early ones. I think I can't remember if it was two or three I had problems playing, and for some reason I ended up with a Game Boy Color version of a Tomb Raider game.
Oh, right.
Never got very far in, and that wasn't the most enjoyable things, kind of 2D platformer. With guns.
You see, it would have been okay if it had harked back to one of the things which influenced it, which was Prince of Persia.
Yes.
Mm.
I always saw the original PS1 series, and it came out on the Saturn as well, the first one. For anyone who's stickler like me. I always thought they were slightly janky attempts at doing Prince of Persia in 3D, and they never quite worked for me.
Well, I just found them really hard to play, but that was when I
the controls were bloody weird.
Yeah, that was when I played them not long after I started playing video games. So,
it's funny because I don't mind 3D platformers. I can do them, but I've never actually played either Tomb Raider or Prince of Persia, really. So I haven't kind of played the almost adult, well, it's not necessarily adult size, but the more mature side of 3D platformers.
Hmm.
I know, it's going to be bad.
Moving away from Tomb Raider, and we'll be looking at more games highlights from Eurogamer next week. I want to know what the after party was like for Eurogamer, the proper official after party.
Now, the proper official after party, the actual after party, or the after after party?
Whichever order needs to, they need to go in.
Well, in order to understand the after after party, the after party has to be there first.
Okay, well, talk about the after party first, and then the after after party.
Okay, well, the after party took place in a an acquired pub for the evening.
Okay.
We all wandered in and were given a Guild Wars 2 over-shoulder bag and T-shirt and a voucher for two drinks, which is a recipe for disaster. So we mingled for a good while, getting to know... you know, some of the people who were there who would, you know, sort of bumped into. I met a few people from the Eurogamer forum who I hadn't met before. I knew them, but I hadn't met them physically. So that was interesting. And it's always a, oh, hello, who are you? And you go, right, okay, your name's Bob. You go, oh, you're such and such from, right, okay, I know such and such from Eurogamer. I don't know who you are, but I know such and such. Right. So we tried carrying on conversations to very loud music from upstairs. There were a few zombies wandering around.
Yeah, there were I've been seeing photos of people dressed up as zombies appearing on Twitter.
Was that just because, or was that actually kind of publicity thing?
It was a Capcom Resident Evil 6 tie-in. Hmm. So yeah, there were zombies. Also, there was there were two zombie burlesque dancers upstairs.
Interesting.
Oh, no.
Really?
No.
Yes.
Oh.
I saw them both perform, but I could be offended.
That sounds like the British version of zombie strippers.
Yeah.
Zombie burlesque dancers.
It's funny, but they seem to have less zombie makeup than the other people who were wandering around. Yeah, how very strange.
Okay, so that's the after party. What about the after after party?
Now.
Ominous.
That's where all the dodgy dealings go on.
Well,
there was more burlesque dancers for a start.
Oh, no, there weren't, actually.
Oh, shame.
It was actually slightly better behaved than the after party.
There was an after party.
There was more drunkenness involved in the after after party.
Okay.
So what happened with this was that several of the Eurogamer staff, including Rupert, who runs it, and Tom Champion, who was one of the main people, if not the main people, you know, behind setting up the expo, also came along, and they were a little the worse for wear because there'd been an industry party as well the night before. So of course, everything had gone very well for them, so they were justifiably letting themselves, you know, enjoy the moment. So the pub closed at I think it was either 11, is that the standard time in London, I think? The bell was rang, anyway.
Yeah,
so
last drinks be about 11, tend to be trying to close up 11:30, midnight.
Yeah. So we got kicked out and we filed out of the pub. And a few of the mods and regulars decided to go with Rupert and a few of the others to the hotel, just to see if the hotel bar was open, which, as it turned out, it wasn't. So we thought, well, we'll just have a quick look up the road, 10 minutes maximum, just to see if we can find another bar open. about half an hour of wandering through London later.
Without any zombies attacking you, I hope.
With no zombies.
Okay.
We managed to get ourselves to a little place called the Mango Bar.
Well, that sounds like it can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So it was one of those little places where it was open to about 2 or 3 a.m. and there was a £10 entrance fee, you know, things like that. And they were selling very expensive cocktails. Now, the photo that's on the Eurogamer blog with the sparkler or the firework bottle, for one of a better description, those were bottles of champagne.
Okay.
That was just
champagne on fire. Cool.
Yeah, champagne on fire. So that was just right. You know, buy those in, share some of the glasses around, and we can all have champagne at a job well done, and basically just be quite drunk early in the morning, and thank everyone for the expo and getting it done. And it was just a very good time had by all. And then there were spilt drinks. And then we all just sort of tumbled and shuffled zombie-like back to hotels to collapse. It was very late, and there were even more drinks consumed, and there was the champagne as well. So,
wow.
Have you recovered?
That was a lot of fun. Sorry?
Have you recovered?
Mostly.
Oh, can I ask one important question?
Go on.
Did you manage to meet up with Cookie and give him a copy of Deadly Premonition?
Yeah. This
it was the other way around, but yes.
We did meet up.
Because it was
very good to meet you, sir.
It was very good to meet you as well. It was a little bit difficult at first because the phone reception in Earl's car is so very patchy.
Yeah, it was terrible. I think I managed to get one tweet out to you.
Yeah, the problem with that is 3G pretty much does not work unless you're in very specific parts of Earl's car inside. And even 2G and standard texts can be very dodgy to try and send while you're in there. So it was, we swapped mobile numbers and eventually managed to get I'm in such and such a place. How about we meet? Oh, good. You're just outside. Right. I'll come and meet you then.
Brilliant.
And,
it was madness, to be fair, the phones. Every time I went to try and send something, it just went, I'm sorry, there's no signal. What?
I had the phone where it was saying that there was a signal. I was getting 2 or 3 bars, and it was still swearing blind. It could not connect. So that played merry hell trying to meet up with anyone.
Well,
while I was there over the weekend, basically, as soon as you met up with people, you stayed with them unless you wanted to, really do something different.
Yeah.
Because trying to get anything sorted was a nightmare.
Yeah, it was.
I can imagine.
You should have brought carrier pigeons with you. It would have been way easier.
Oh, that would have made us very popular in Earl's Court.
Or monkeys that are well trained in delivering messages. Tiny monkeys, mind you.
Rings.
Tiny, polite, well trained monkeys.
Yeah.
Excuse me, have you seen Cookie?
Fly, my pretties, fly.
I think on that delightful note, I have to say that is sadly all we've got time for this week.
Until we recover,
and we'll give you a bit more sauce on Eurogamer next week. Yeah. Oh man, it sounds like it was absolute joy to go to it.
It was. It was the first ever one.
It was quite an amazing place. I think if you're into your gaming and things like that,
it was brilliant.
Yeah, kind of makes me wish that we could have gone.
Well, we could try and go next year.
Yeah. Or yeah.
Well, if try and go next year.
So I mean, is the expo this expo the biggest gaming one?
It's pretty much the biggest gaming one in the UK.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, yeah, probably we'll go next year then.
I was going to say, it's the Eurogamer Expo and... next year's Eurogamer Expo.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, so that's all we've got time for this week, lovely people. So it's goodbye from me. I'm Emily. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891.
It's good night from me. I'm Paul Blewett on Twitter, and I have a website, paul-blewett.com, which mostly houses my editing stuff.
And it's good night from me, Paul, aka onearmed_cookie on Twitter, and you can also find me stumbling around the game jar.
And it's lastly good night from me, Paul, aka Retroid, or Retroid of Eurogamer, and at Super Retroid on Twitter.
All right, and you can catch all your lovely Nerds Assemble goodness at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk, on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. We're also on Facebook at Nerds Assemble Podcast. I believe we may also be lurking on Google Plus under that monkier. So yeah, that's good night
We'll probably stick on the links to the Klingon style parody
of Gangnam Style, of course. Yeah. Of course, we'll link to it.
Oh. People
we've spoken about it, so
yeah.
Yeah.
So good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.